It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now here are your hosts, Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino.
And we welcome you into Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us this morning with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Football Giants. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can't get to the phones. There's also an opportunity to make your voice heard, make your presence felt. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can also follow and interact with the both of us directly. Paul is at Giants WFAN. I am at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. As we take you through the biggest storylines out of training camp, it is important to note that the Giants are wrapping up training camp today. This will be the final practice that is open to the public. It's not the end of fine-tuning everything for the start of the season, but they will formally wrap up the open practice formations in this part of the offseason today. They will continue to practice next week, but obviously it will be a different structure and a different setup as they prepare for the final two preseason games. Let's go over the injury report, because that usually is the biggest storyline each and every morning. And probably the two positives are that Odell Beckham Jr. continues to make progress, took part in some team drills, actually caught one in the end zone yesterday. And the other positive that I took away, Paul, is the fact that Will Beatty and Tremaine McBride, barring any setbacks last minute, those two are expected to suit up against the Indianapolis Colts. And a lot of fans specifically want to see what Will Beatty can do.
Well, we don't know if they're going to start. In fact, we don't think they will. Tom Coughlin was rather evasive on exactly what we're going to see from those guys. But I didn't get the impression that they were going to start the game. I'm thinking on the basis of what Tom likes to do in game one of the preseason, 15 to 20 snaps. I don't think we're going to see much more than that. But I do think it is extremely significant that Beatty, who I was told even a month ago at the earliest would be available for the Colts game, is indeed on schedule. Because as John and I talked yesterday, had he missed the Colts game, that would have given me an indication that he was not as far along as they had hoped. And then only playing two preseason games would have really made him very iffy for the Detroit regular season opener. So I think that in itself is a very, very big deal. Now, how well he performs, folks, look, you got to be realistic about this. I know he's practiced a lot, but he hasn't played at game speed, game tempo, against an opposition. I'm not exactly expecting him to look very sharp. And I know we all want to be quick to grade him, and we all want him to be as good as he can be as quickly as possible, but that's not going to happen. So please understand, when he gets out there for his 15 to 20 snaps, if he gets beat three or four times, gets a couple of penalties, gives up a sack, look, no one wants to see that, but understand where this guy's coming from, because that was a serious leg injury last year, and he still hasn't had live game speed now in about 9 months? That's pretty tough.
To put things in perspective, the positive is he's out there on the field. But as Paul mentioned, we don't need to sit here and overanalyze the 15 to 20 snaps. And as you mentioned, Paul, he's only going to get the number of snaps that he would have gotten if he played in that Bills game. As Tom Coughlin mentioned, it's not as if they're going to throw him in the fire in this third preseason
game.
They
can't.
And play him as much as the other starters.
They can't. There's no way that his conditioning is going to be up to par. And he himself said it was the conditioning of his leg, the fatigue of his leg, that was causing him to have this limited schedule during the early part of the camp. So to me, as we've discussed, I think, a couple of times, Lance, if he's got three preseason games to go, I'm going to say I hope that by the Patriots game in 3 weeks that he's able to, well, actually, it's more like 2 weeks, isn't it? Because it's the August 28th. I would hope by then, maybe they get a half out of him. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not so sure he can give them 65 snaps against the Lions opening day of the regular season. That may be even a little too much to ask. I'm just not sure right now. This is going to be a wait-and-see thing. But one thing we do know, at least he's going to be out there. I would anticipate that while you mentioned McBride also, that Beckham will not play. I just don't see that happening. He just hasn't had enough of reps yet to prepare him for game action. So if it were me, and Tom Coughlin was non-committal, I would wait till the Jets game to see any snaps for Odell Beckham.
That makes the most sense to me. I would agree. I think the first opportunity for him to get some game action will likely be against the New York Jets. The positive with him, like we're talking about with respect to Will Beatty, you just want to see these guys on the field, Paul. You don't want to hear about the chatter. You don't want to hear one press conference after another saying, I'm getting better, I'm getting better. Let's see it. It's show me time. It's show me time for Will Beatty. It's show me time for Odell Beckham Jr. It's show me time for Tremaine McBride. Three players who could certainly play integral roles on this team. But talk is over. Talk is cheap, as they always say. It's time to put something on the field. And I think this is going to be a telling weekend, at least, in terms of taking a step in the right direction and at least appeasing to the fan base to show that they're making progress, because we hear it so much. How many times do we talk about JPP's 100%, he's 110%? Paul, listen, we could sit here day and night and break down words left and right. It doesn't mean anything unless you all of a sudden translate it to the football field.
Well, you know what? We've also discussed this, Lance. Fans are impatient. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, especially when you've had a team that's had success over the last several years, although, again, not necessarily playoff bids, but they've won a lot of games here, and the two Super Bowls in the last decade as well. They're not really looking forward to rebuilding. They're not looking for patience. They're not looking for, okay, how is this going to have to manifest itself? Trial and error. There are going to be a lot of growing pains. There's going to be a lot of bumps and bruises along the road. That's not what they want. And I think now, at least after the first two preseason games, I think fans are now starting to realize what this preseason is all about. Because they had high expectations. I know they did. I was getting them on Twitter. We were getting the phone calls. I think they now get it after the first 2 weeks. You know, when Eli Manning said the other day, and it was probably better than any of us could put it, when he said, we have plays we need to try out. And even when I get up there and I see that it's not going to work against that defense, it's not the scheme we were looking for. And he knows it's a bad play. They run it anyway, because he said there are things to be learned by running these plays that we're very unfamiliar with. So it's not about, you know, breaking off a 15-yard run or throwing a 45-yard touchdown pass off of an audible because you need to win the game. That's not what this is. These are truly, if I can equate it, Lance, this may be one of the few times where I can remember the preseason games are really more like scrimmages than they are games, for the Giants at least, offensively. Maybe not on the defensive side of the ball, but on the offensive side of the ball, these are more scrimmages for them because they have to run their own agenda. And that is, we want to run these plays no matter what it looks like on the other side. We're just going to run these plays because we need our guys to understand what these plays are, and it doesn't matter if they fail. We just need to know that we can execute the plays. I don't know that I've ever actually heard a coach or a quarterback tell me that in all the years that I've covered the NFL about the preseason, to where it is just so new. The scheme is just coming out of nowhere, this West Coast thing with a new offensive coordinator, to where all they care about is just getting familiar with their plays. It's a different dynamic, and that's why it looks so ugly at times.
An experimental phase, basically. They're just trying to test the water, going through the routine of getting comfortable, lining up the personnel. How do you execute that type of thing, as opposed to worrying about, like you mentioned, breaking through with the 80-yard, 90-yard play?
Well, in this case, Lance, a win means that everybody was on the same page, lined up where they were supposed to be, block the guy they were supposed to be, and even if the play goes for a sack, it might actually have been a win because they did it the way it was drawn up. Now, just because the defense sent something else and it wasn't what they were supposed to do. I guess what I'm telling you is they're doing things now that they would never do in a real game because Eli would audible out to an appropriate play.
You can't right sacrifice now, plays in a regular season.
Great word. He's sacrificing yardage and plays for the sake of getting the stuff down. I've never, ever in all my years of preseason football, despite the meaningless label that people want to put on it, I've never actually heard it expressed that way or the degree to which the Giants are doing it. It's really unique.
Very unique. One last thing that I want to add with respect to testing out the offense. Ben McAdoo spoke earlier this week and related to what we were just discussing, his last answer to one of the questions that was thrown out to him. I love it how he took a shot at the media. I don't know if you remember this, Paul, where he was talking about he loves the reports that are out there about the miscues between the players on offense. He says right now why there are so many ups and downs in the preseason, it's timing. You know, getting back to what you were discussing, players maybe not being in the right spot, not being comfortable, so that's why Manning can't hook up with a Jarrell Jernigan, for example, on the left side of the field. Not so much that everybody doesn't know what they're doing, it's just, you know, little off, fraction of a second here or there in terms of how the play is executed.
And we all know that in the NFL, with all those moving parts on every single snap, they've all got to be cohesive or the play will not work. It's just that simple. And, folks, I invite you, if you haven't, to come out to practice. Now, today's the last one of this training camp.
What a way to sell it to them.
But please, next year, if you have a chance, and I mean this wholeheartedly, if you have a chance and you've never come out to a practice before, or maybe you don't understand some of the X's and the O's that we're talking about, or you just want to educate yourself a little bit more, come out to one of these training camp practices and watch some of the 7-on-7s. Watch some of the drills they run against the invisible defense when they literally go against air, but it's important because the guys are running these timing routes and they're running their curls and their outs and their hooks and all these other things that they're doing because it's all about making sure that the receiver runs 7 yards downfield, does his little spin, plants his foot, does his hook, and the ball's got to be right there where it's supposed to be. Sometimes you can learn more by watching practice than you can by watching the games. And I don't think a lot of fans truly understand that. It's a science. It really is. I mean, it's why I love watching practice every day. I've been doing it for 3 decades. It's what I do. I eat it up. And I just think that if you have a chance, you should come out.
And I should add, if they have an opportunity to sit next to you watching practice, that takes the experience to levels that I can't even put into words this morning.
Bring a bottle of aspirin if you're doing that.
Very good advice. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets. We'll get to your phone calls. Let's start with the lines. And we go to, let's start with Nana in Georgia. Nana, what's happening?
Hi. How are you guys?
Doing well. How about yourself? What you got?
Good, thank you. I wanted to talk about Odell Beckham. You know, I feel like it's unfortunate, you know, the whole hamstring thing that he's going through. You know, I really wasn't happy about that, being that he was our 12th overall pick and that, you know, he, you know, tweaked it again, you know, during, you know, the practice, I mean, the beginning of training camp. But right now, I feel like they're kind of rushing him, trying to rush him back. And I feel like, you know, in the long run, rushing him back isn't going to help us. You know, I feel like they need to make sure it heal all the way up and then put him out there, you know, because I know y'all saying it's show me time. Yeah, it's show me time, but not at the cost of injuring his hamstring even more if it's not fully healed.
Well, I understand where you're coming from. You don't want to put him in a position where he's going to re-aggravate it. But you know, I would argue, Nana, I think they've actually taken their time with him. We're talking about 2 full weeks. He's missed the first 2 preseason games. He was very limited, did some work on the side. We're talking about 2 days where he's actually now started to get back into team drills. So it's not as if they all of a sudden threw him back into the fire after just 1 week. I think they've been very cautious in terms of how quickly they're throwing him back into the mix.
I mean, I hear that because, yeah, we all do want to see him play, you know, because that's our number one pick, you know. But I just feel like at the end of the day, they need to make sure he is fully healed so he will re-aggravate it sometime during the beginning of the season or in the preseason, you know. So that's just where I'm coming from with that. And I also wanted to talk about Will Beatty. I'm not comfortable with him coming back in, you know, because he is the same guy that had Eli thrown around the whole season last year. So he comes in and, you know, it's like, be patient with him. Why be patient with him? Okay, yeah, he just came off of this injury or whatever, but at the same time, this is still the same guy who played terribly last year. So why does he get a pass? I feel like, you know, we need to bring somebody else in that can keep Eli upright, not somebody who we just got to be patient with because he's coming off of injury.
Well, who else are you going to bring in, Nana? At this point of the season, who else are you bringing in that's going to protect Eli?
There's people out on the market. Who's that guy they've been talking about, that Boone guy?
Alex Boone from the Niners. He's not a free agent. You have to pull off a trade to get him.
Okay, why? I don't think that's impossible, because aren't they asking for a fourth round for him?
Well, the market tends to go up and down depending on the day, and there's other teams that have shown interest. It's not just the Giants necessarily negotiating with the Niners, and everything's speculation. There's nothing that we could throw out that's any substance. That would be one option, but sometimes it's very difficult to work out a trade, and the Giants don't necessarily feel that they want to part so easily with draft picks, because draft picks do have value in the long run.
I mean, I feel like, to me, that would be a good investment. You know, it's not... Oh, you know, it would just be a senseless, you know, trade. This is something that we actually need. And to me, I'm looking at it like Beatty, I don't feel like he's going to get any better than what he already is. And, you know, the last
if he could get back to his 2012 form, you mentioned that you're not going to see drastic improvement. If he could get back to his 2012 form, I would think that the Giants would take that and complain very little. If he could get back to his 2012 form, he doesn't have to improve dramatically. As long as he can return to 2 years ago, they will take that. Let's not forget about what he did in 2012.
Okay, but that's the thing. That was the year prior to his last season. My thing is, you're only as good as your last game. And the last game, to me, I'm just looking at it as, you know, he's not going to get any better. How's he going to get better coming off of these injuries?
Well, the goal is to get him healthy. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be in a position to make plays. I mean, that's the goal. I understand that the expectations are not through the roof, and I'm not trying to tell you to feel, you know, overly excited, but based on their options, Paul, I mean, you got to take it for what it is, and Will Beatty, hopefully, he returns to full health and he gets back to that 2012 form. That's the most optimistic view right now.
Look, let's make something very, 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 very clear here. The Giants made their bed when they decided to draft a wide receiver in the first round, okay? And for everybody who is so excited that they went for an offensive weapon or a skill position player, this is what you had to understand, is that by passing on a tackle, as Zach Martin of Notre Dame was sitting there, you wound up, you know, with a skill position player. And that's just the nature of the beast. Now, look, they got an interior offensive lineman around too, which I'm thrilled about. But this is what I warned you about from the very beginning. If you listen to the show and if you follow my Twitter page, from the very beginning, I tried to tell people that I was not comfortable with the offensive tackle position on this team. Apparently, all those folks who mocked me many months ago are starting to understand it now.
Appreciate the phone call, Nana. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. I want to get to a few tweets related to what Nana was bringing up in terms of the concern of Beatty, also related to Alex Boone. And in case you're just joining us or you didn't understand the reference, Alex Boone is a guard with the San Francisco 49ers. And there's been a lot of chatter because supposedly the Niners and he are far apart in contract extension talk. So as a result, they've been at least listening to some offers. I've seen reports that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are interested since they have lost Carl Nix due to retirement and so forth. There's been a lot of talk, but let's put this in perspective here, and this relates to Mike Farmer's tweet at mfarmer20. Boone is not a left tackle. He's a good guard, one that I still may consider trading for if the price is right, but he's not our answer at left tackle. And that's where Mike Farmer hit it right on the nose. He has experience at tackle. Okay, let's at least clarify and put things, you know, big picture here. He has played left tackle and right tackle at some points throughout the course of his career. But in terms of the short term, he has been mainly a guard. That would be somewhat of an issue if you bring him in. There's going to be somewhat of a transitional period back to tackle. You know, I would feel comfortable if you're going to trade for a guy, I want to know that he's taken X amount of reps and he's played 16 games at that left tackle spot. So that's at least somewhat of a red flag of concern if you were to sacrifice a draft pick to bring in Alex Boone. I'm not saying he's not a good offensive lineman. He's a very effective offensive lineman, one of the best guards in the NFL. And he's proven that the last few years, considering he was an undrafted rookie. So that says a lot about his development. But as Mike Farmer threw out on Twitter, we're talking about a player that has been mainly a guard over the last few seasons. Yeah. Do you really want to bank on all of a sudden him making the transition back to tackle? Everybody is looking at the film and saying he's a great guard. That doesn't mean it's going to be so smooth back to tackle.
And what's the price, Lance? I mean, depending upon who you believe out there in the web world, it could be a third-round pick, which I've seen listed on some sites. I've also seen someone else post that the Niners are trying to get a number one for him. There's no way I'm giving up the number one at this point, because then on top of that, you got to pay him a new deal, you know, because he wants a multi-year contract. That's the whole reason to try to trade him. So, you know, I just don't see that happening. Now, if it was a lower pick and maybe even a conditional, because it's based on the number of snaps he plays and how well he does, I could understand that. But if you're the Giants, here's the problem. You've given up franchise money virtually to Will Beatty. You're banking on him to get it right. You've put all this time and effort into the offseason to try to get him medically back, and you still haven't even seen him on the field. They really believe and want to believe that Will Beatty is going to get this job done. I get that. The time to address this would have been months ago, either in the draft or with a free agent such as Eric Winston. That was the time to do it. At this particular moment in time, you're up against it. You're scrambling. The season is almost upon us. Your best case scenario is, after you've devoted all this medical time into rehabbing Will Beatty, is getting him out there and making it happen. That's the best case scenario right now. At the same time, I'm going to tell you, I'm looking at the waiver wire for the cut to 75 and for the cut to 53. And I know the Giants are looking at it too when it comes out. And if there's somebody there who clearly can help them out, I think they would make a move. But it's not going to be to grab a starter, because you're not going to get anybody good enough to start at left tackle at this point in the summer. What you may get is somebody who's better than James Brewer or Charlie Brown. That might happen.
Build up the depth chart. That's the only hope that you can ask for at this point. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. AJ Marshall at AJ Marshall 3. Any news on Mike Patterson? Will he be able to play on Saturday? Patterson's been nursing a shoulder injury. Paul, I believe he was in pads yesterday.
Yes.
But there really is still no definitive answer as to whether or not he'll suit up against the Colts.
That is correct. We have not heard if he will play or not. But the fact that he was out there in pads, and I also have to believe, because he has missed a number of practices in the last week or so, he wants to get back out there. Let's face it. There's no question Mike Patterson wants to compete. And that defensive tackle spot is quite a battle. So I would think he's going to see some reps, but I can't be sure.
Continuing on Twitter, we'll get back to the phone lines. Just a lot of you are sending in tweets regarding Will Beatty, so I want to at least continue the conversation. Dink and Dunk at Mr. Ruiz 81. I like it how everybody's changing their handles over the last few days. It seems like Mike Farmer set the tone. He says, we missed our opportunity to sign Eric Winston, who is actually the president of the NFLPA and is a seasoned veteran. He's with the Texans, with the Chiefs, and now he signed with the Seattle Seahawks. Here's the thing with Eric Winston, Paul, and I'm curious your thoughts. Winston wound up signing with the Seahawks after, you know, the market played out and he wasn't necessarily picked up automatically. When people say that the Giants missed out on an opportunity to sign Eric Winston, this is why I believe that's misleading. He had an opportunity to go to a team. They were selling him on being a starter, Paul. Because if you recall, the Seahawks lost Breno Giacomini this offseason. He wound up signing with the Jets. They had a hole on the offensive line, Paul. So if you're going to Eric Winston and you're saying, Eric, you sign with us, you have a realistic shot to be a starting tackle on our offensive line. If the Giants hypothetically, and I'm just talking hypothetics here, if they go to Eric Winston and they say, Eric, we want you to come in, but you're probably going to back up Justin Pugh and Will Beatty. If you're a free agent and you have the urge to start, what team are you picking? You got to pick Seattle. So when we say the Giants missed out on Eric Winston, number one, there's no definitive evidence that they approached him, or there's no definitive evidence that, you know, there were some talks and that was what was sold to him. But you have to understand, sometimes a team, the reason why they win the sweepstakes is because they have a better offer to the player in terms of playing time, not so much money. But they can tell Eric Winston, you come in, you're going to start day one. That's appealing to a veteran that may not have a lot more years under his belt.
Here's what I would say to that. If Eric Winston had been discussed way back when, at the end of April or in May, and they said to him, look, come on in. Will Beatty is a medical issue right now. We don't know where he stands. You're going to get the chance to compete at tackle. And perhaps if you do really well, we might just keep you there. That would not have been an issue. What you're talking about does not necessarily have to be a red flag for him. If he believed in his talents, and at that time in the springtime when the Giants had major issues, he could have said to himself, I believe I'm good enough that I will go in there and I will take a job away from somebody. Because after all, we know that offensive line is in the rebuilding stage. I disagree with you. I think that there were opportunities there months ago. Now, not necessarily now, but months ago, he had ample opportunity to show that he was good enough to take a job. And by the way, his deal with the Seahawks, and this is rather disturbing, 1 year for $955,000. It includes a $100,000 roster bonus.
Incentives.
I mean, he did not get much at all for an accomplished left tackle. Actually, he's more of a right tackle, but he has played left in this league before. And yes, the Seahawks are saying that he is in the mix to potentially grab a starting job, if not right away, certainly during the season. I understand that. And they are the Super Bowl champs. I get that. But 4 or 5 months ago, my hunch is the Seahawks had not contacted him, or he would have signed with them then.
Well, but Paul, getting back to your point, realistically, let's use your hypothetical. A few months ago, is he coming in? Is he taking Justin Pugh's spot away?
Oh, no.
At right tackle.
Okay. No, he's not.
So the only realistic shot he has is left tackle. Would you agree?
Yes.
Meaning there's a chance. But knowing the amount of money that they have tied up with Will Beatty, if he's at least thinking that in his mind, and I know we're playing the coulda, woulda, shoulda games, I just don't still see it as appealing even months ago, Paul. Because this guy's not a guard and he's not a center. He's a tackle.
Right.
So he's got one shot to make this team. And to me, it's got backup written all over it, regardless of the question marks surrounding Beatty.
Well, when you look at Beatty's medical problems and the fact that he gave up 11.5 sacks last year, if you're Eric Winston, you have to believe that you could be better than that. And what you do is, like when Kurt Warner came in here and they knew that Eli Manning was going to be the guy, he signed a contract with an opt-out at the end of the season. You sign your one-year deal, you sign something with an opt-out, and all you're doing is saying, look, if I can win a starting job, great. But if I don't, at least I prove to somebody that I'm still in the league, I make a couple of bucks, and then I get the heck out of there at the end of the season if I want to, and then cash in somewhere else. I honestly don't see the same barrier that you see, especially if we turn back the clock 4 or 5 months ago. I just don't.
Well, I'm sure he would have grabbed it months ago, Paul, because for a player that's itching to get back on the field, I don't disagree with you from that standpoint.
Well,
the Giants would have came calling. He would have definitely
considered
it.
Here's the problem, though. Eric Winston wasn't going on visits months ago, and I still don't get that. Was it union-related? Maybe. There are some teams who shy away from those union guys, and I understand that. The Giants are not one of them, though. They want guys who can play and help them win. They don't give a flying horse's butt about any of that stuff. They never have. But for some reason, months and months of the spring and summer went by, and Eric Winston was not going on any workouts or any tryouts. He wasn't to be heard from at all. And that's the part that I don't get, unless he was saying, I need a guaranteed starting job, and I need X number of dollars. And you know what, folks? If I'm not getting that, I'm not even talking, because I'm going to wait it out. And maybe after waiting out all the way into August, he finally realized that My demands are just not going to happen. It's time that I go crawling on my hands and knees asking somebody for a job. And, oh, by the way, the world champions just happened to call. And that's a pretty good reason to move.
Quite appealing.
Yeah.
That could have been the mindset. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Wellington is in New York. Wellington, good morning. How's everything?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How about yourself? What you got?
Doing well. I'd like to talk about the tight end situation. I was really high on Eric Ebron in the draft, and we passed on him. Well,
thank goodness.
Yeah?
Thank goodness.
I know how important it is for a security blanket for Eli at the tight end position. All of the playoff runs we've made since 2007, 2011, we've had a service.
You don't want a one-dimensional guy like Ebron who was all about himself and all about catching the ball. You would have been very frustrated had he been here. Trust me. That is not a guy you wanted for this offense.
Well, the guys we have now are very uninspiring to me.
Of course they are. I understand that.
Fells right now. Robinson hasn't lived up to his potential. So what are we looking at this year at that position?
Maybe somebody who gets cut off on the waiver wire by somebody else. Seriously, I'm not joking. I think that there are four positions the Giants may pick up a player for. That is, I think it's tight end. I think it's running back. I think it's offensive tackle. And I also wouldn't be shocked if they wind up grabbing a veteran wide receiver in the next couple of weeks either.
Okay. Well, that position kind of scares me.
Wellington, in fairness, and I didn't mean to cut you off, I'll let you continue. When you say the Giants passed on Eric Ebron, I mean, technically that's not correct because, remember, he was taken two picks before, so
right,
it wasn't
right,
as if the
yeah.
Giants passed on him. They didn't even have an opportunity to draft him. Let's at least, put that out there.
They were not interested anyway.
There were a number of red flags, as Paul mentioned, and I'm not a big believer, that's my personal philosophy, in taking a tight end in the first round, especially when, there's always question marks regarding a tight end, depending on how you utilize him in your offense. So I don't really think it was a huge loss that they didn't grab him. Let me at least say that.
Okay. Well, I just feel like we need to solidify that position. Eli Manning has always relied on a good serviceable tight end, good hands.
Well, he has, and listen, I've thrown this out on previous shows, especially earlier in the week, and, people disagree, people agree, depending on where you stand. I think the conversation about tight ends, Wellington, we tend to get caught up as fans in names, and everybody feels as if you need a name to feel very good about a tight end, and I'm not telling you get overly excited over this group. As Paul laid out, he's already scouring the waiver wire, trust me, he's doing it on a nightly basis. But that doesn't mean that somebody in this group, with some more preseason games under their belt, with a few more weeks of camp left, can at least become a serviceable tight end. You mentioned that Eli always relies on the tight end. Well, Jake Ballard, Kevin Boss, there are a number of tight ends that were unknown commodities that became serviceable. I'm not saying they became superstars, Wellington, but they were good enough to make plays, make catches, and know their roles. Who's to say that they can't get that type of consistency out of at least one of these four or five guys?
Right, but from what I've been hearing from camp is that there's so much inconsistency at that position.
Well, and Tom Coughlin did mention that yesterday. He was asked that very question, and you quoted him on the money. He said that there's been good days, there's been bad days, there's been ups, and there's been downs. However, to counter that, Ben McAdoo spoke to the media earlier this week and was asked, is there anyone that stood out? And he actually highlighted Larry Dinell and did say that Larry Dinell, to him, has had good practices, and he's carried over somewhat to games. Is there still room for improvement? Absolutely. But he actually selected one tight end who he felt has made somewhat of a statement.
Okay.
All right, Wellington.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. You don't seem to be sold on anyone in particular. Is that a fair assumption?
There's no doubt in my mind that Dinell and Fells have inched ahead of the other guys in camp. But to say that either of those guys makes me feel very good, I can't do that. It's not a good position right now, Lance. And, the one thing that really disturbs me about the tight end spot is that I come from the old school. The old school says your tight end better have some gumption about him. He better show some real fire. He better be able to take on a linebacker and maybe even sometimes a defensive end and give him a battle. That's where I really have problems here, because I think virtually any tight end could catch a couple of passes a game, 9 yards a pop. Big deal. I think almost anybody can do that if they get to this level. But the guy who's got the heart, the fire, the intensity, the wherewithal, the want to save his quarterback or to get the edge for his running back, that's the guy that I want. You got to put it out there and show me that you're a football player, you're bleeding from the nose, you're foaming at the mouth, you're willing to get your fingernails dirty, and you're going to get into it, and you're going to do what you need to do at that line of scrimmage to make sure that that play succeeds. And quite frankly, when you look at this crop of tight ends, you do not see that.
But you don't need a name, is what I feel, to fulfill that role and that characteristic that you're talking about, Paul. And I feel a lot of people are saying Jermichael Finley, because he's a name. But you're looking for a blocker. You're looking for a guy that's going to get down and dirty in the trenches.
And Finley's not a blocker. He does happen to fit McAdoo's offense because of his Packers connection, which is why we had talked about how that would have been a fit. But in my old school mentality, I don't care if the guy's name is Mr. Magoo. I really don't. If Mr. Magoo is going to get into it and do that physical kind of stuff that I want him to do, then I'm signing him tomorrow.
And that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Oh, Magoo, you did it
again,
right?
Mr. Magoo, sign him up right now.
I'm all for
it. Joe Schmo off the street. Hey, if he wants a block, bring him in.
I mean, and that's my problem. Because, look, with the supposed weapons on this team, the running backs who are going to catch a lot of passes, and the Cruises of the world, and hopefully the Randalls of the world, and hopefully the Beckhams of the world, there are not enough footballs to go around to have a tight end who's going to catch 60 passes. That's not the way this is going to work, in spite of the fact that the West Coast offense does use a lot of tight end, and they do send guys into the slants and the downfield.
And does tend to spread the wealth, too.
I get that. But your tight end is not going to be a Pro Bowl receiver with this Giants team, even though it's a West Coast offense. It's not going to be that way. So if the tight end catches 40 balls, all right, two a game, let's say, that'd be 32. Let's just say 40 balls. If that's all he catches and averages 10 yards a catch, 9 yards a catch, I don't care. That's fine. What you got to show me is, on a consistent basis, you're going to get in there and scrap. You're going to save that quarterback. You're going to help those running backs out. You're going to help out creating a little bit more of a power running game than what we've seen the last several years. Show me that, and I'm happy.
With that being said, looking for that tight end that, you know, wants to be physical, from what I've seen during the preseason games, they do also utilize two tight ends at times, which means you could have one guy run out and receive and one guy block. So you don't necessarily need to find, I guess what I'm getting at, Paul, the one overall great tight end. Maybe you have two or three guys, and they each have their strengths, and you rotate them throughout the season.
You have no idea right now how thrilled I would be with Kevin Boss, with Jake Ballard, with Dan Campbell, who, by the way, backed up Jeremy Shockey years ago out of Texas A&M. Would love to have Dan Campbell right now. Be ecstatic. You'd see me doing handstands and backflips. We don't have him.
And he was known as that physical guy. That's what they're looking for. That's what they're looking for in terms of a guy that each and every practice, each and every preseason game knows his assignments and will block.
And by the way, Campbell was known as a physical blocker when he came here, and he did want to catch more passes, but he understood his role. Boss was not a great blocker technique-wise when he got here, but he was a big guy.
And neither was Ballard.
And was willing to learn. Ballard, same thing. You know, these guys understood, okay, this is what I have to do. I've got the physical tools to try to do this, and you know what? I'm going to try to do it. Bear Pascal, same thing. Was not the most gifted guy in the world. But boy, you know what? Hey, I got to save my quarterback. I got to get that hole for my running back. I got to seal that edge for my guy. I'm going to try. I know I may not be very good at it, but I'm going to try. I'm really, really going to scrap, and I'm going to fight, and I'm going to do whatever I can to make that play work. I look at these tight ends, and I don't see that on a consistent basis play in and play out. I just don't. And that's a problem for me.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's go to JD in North Carolina. JD, what's happening?
Hey, Paul and Lance. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Paul, you just touched on the necessity of having an effective power running game, and that actually kind of leads me into what I want to discuss today. I mean, based on the personnel situations that the team's facing this year, and the fact that we've kind of got maybe a little bit more than what everybody was expecting in our running back stable, I think the focus of the offense overall is probably going to be a little bit more on the running game than the passing game this season. And I wanted to see what you guys thought about maybe Jennings and Williams being a possibility of having 2,000-yard rushers this season.
Well, I don't see that happening, but what I do see is definitely more of a focus on getting back to somewhat of a power running game. I don't think it's going to be the focus of what it was some years ago when Bradshaw and, of course, remember Ward and Brandon Jacobs and those guys were really pounding the rock. You're not going to see that. But Tom Coughlin knows. Heck, he's seen it the last few years on how when you don't have any semblance of a power running game, you're putting too much pressure on your quarterback, your line, your receivers. You've got to be able to be more effective with that power running game if you're going to do anything in the green zone, if you're going to keep defenses honest, if you're going to control the clock at all. I mean, there are too many advantages to having a power running game just to throw it in the garbage and say, we're not going to have one anymore. And the Giants have learned that over the last few years, which is why they want to get back to some of it. Again, not to the degree that they used to have, I don't believe. But I do believe that they want to reconstruct some of it. So I'm with you there. But to say they're going to have 2,000-yard rushers, No, I think that would be fully committing to the power running game, and this West Coast attack is not going to do that.
Okay, well, thanks for the thoughts, guys. I'll listen to the rest of it online. Thanks, guys.
All right, JD, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the phone lines. Dominic is in Pennsylvania. Dominic, what's happening?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Dominic. What you got?
Good. I'm really nervous about the offensive line, the left tackle side. There's going to be some bleeding if Vitti cannot, you know, deliver based on what we're paying him. And I understand, you know, what we have invested in him financially. But my concern more than Vitti is depth at that position. So question number one is who right now is behind Will Vitti? Assuming he gets in the number one official, you know, the number one slot on the official depth chart.
Well, Charles Brown has been the one that's been slid in as the starter. So, I mean, if Beattie comes back, you move everybody down the depth chart. And Paul is already having some type of movements every time I say Charles Brown. I'm not trying to tell you that Charles Brown is going to make you feel warm and cozy, if you see what I'm saying, Dominic, in terms of your backup. But if you want a depth chart out of us, Charles Brown would be number two. And then, obviously, you have a James Brewer in the mix as well. So those would be the top three on the depth chart, at least when it comes to the tackle spot.
Well, I firmly believe that, you know, Beattie, you know, presents a lot of discomfort for a lot of fans, but I think we would be a lot more comfortable if the number two on the depth chart behind Beattie, we invested in somebody who could pick up the slack if things did not pan out for him, or he was re-injured. And secondly, you know, we talk about wide receivers and tight ends, you know, and I think that, you know, we have, you know, probably the best QB wide receiver package in the East. But what is it all going to be without protection? If Eli can't get the ball off, we could have Steve Smith on the receiving core. And it wouldn't mean anything if, you know, if Eli could not get the ball off. So I think that a lot of fans, we need to remember not to put the cart before the horse. He needs the protection. You know, people, and I've listened all season, you know, all off-season long, and, you know, people are critical of Eli, but I don't criticize Eli until I know we have a solidified offensive line. So I want to caution the callers to, you know, just, you know, if you understand football, understand Eli has to be in a comfortable position to get those passes off, and I'd like you guys to kind of give me some feedback on that as well. I appreciate you taking the time out and taking my call. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Dominic.
You know, Lance, I don't think he's taking the point far enough. He's concerned about Eli getting enough time to get the ball off. I'm concerned about keeping Eli healthy. Let's be blunt about this. You know, if that left tackle spot does not play up to par, Eli Manning, who took a battering last year and who is now 33 years old, is not going to be around for 16 games. So forget about him being rushed in the pocket and throwing bad passes or interceptions. You may wind up with Ryan Nassib or Curtis Painter in the game before long if Eli continues to get abused like he did last season.
Well, as Dominic was alluding to, it's contingent on the offensive line. All of those factors, Eli Manning's success, his health, you name it. Because the conversation all of last season, Paul, everybody was critical of Eli Manning, and he deserves some criticism. His decision-making wasn't on key, but more often than not, he was pressured so much that he was ineffective, obviously. So the game plan this offseason was we need to address the offensive line. And yes, they brought in some bodies. I think it's been a little disappointing, Paul. Some of the backups just have not lived up to expectations and have not performed. That's been the issue.
Remember the other cardinal rule of thumb in football. It's easier for an offensive line to block for the run than it is for the pass. Remember that. Another reason, among many, why the Giants want to reestablish some sort of power running game. Because, A, that means fewer times Eli has to drop back. B, it means the offensive line should have an easier time blocking for that run as opposed to constantly backing up on their heels trying to protect a pass against a pass rush. And quite frankly, C, and another very, very, very important part to this, is you want to keep defenses honest. Look, how many times in the last 2 years have you seen the Giants go up to the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3 and Eli's working out of the shotgun? I mean, come on. Really? Really? 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3? You're going shotgun for that? Look, I know that's the trend in the NFL. Everybody wants to wing it and throw it. Hey, what happened to Vince Lombardi? I'm going to punch you in the nose. 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3. Guess what? This is the play we're running. Try to stop me. We'll ram it right down your throat.
Well, that was the philosophy a few years ago. Lately, that hasn't been the philosophy. They may have shown the run, and the defense is saying to themselves, we are going to stop you.
No.
That's what the philosophy is.
No, they're not even showing the run. That's what's happened the last few years. They're strictly going past because everybody knows that you can disrespect the Giants' running game. Why bother? We know what they're going to do. They're either going to go shotgun draw or Eli's going to look downfield. Why bother?
Especially when they were in the goal line. And that's what made it somewhat predictable, and that's why fans were calling up and criticizing everybody.
It was horrific. It was horrific. Folks, look, it's a simple game. Yes, but what's not simple about the game of football, and this is unlike hockey, basketball, and baseball, there is a domino effect on everything that you do in the National Football League, whether it's personnel deployment, guys you keep on the roster, plays you call, style of play that you decide to employ. Everything is a domino effect. And this horrible, horrible, horrible situation that has crumbled this offensive line has affected the power running game. It's affected the passing game. It's affected everything that happens on the football field. The root of all of it, the one root that has affected more dominoes than anything else with this Giants franchise the last few years, has been the crumbling offensive line. And maybe, just maybe, it's a little bit on the upswing now, with the exception of the left tackle spot, which is still a mystery. But the rest of those spots appear to be moving upward just a little bit.
I would agree. I think Mosley has had some good days. Jeff Schwartz has had some good days. J.D. Walton, you're not really hearing much about. And it's always a good thing when you're not talking about other offensive linemen. So, you know, I think we're getting caught up with the offensive line as a whole because of the question mark at left tackle. But you're right. Everybody else, for the most part, I think has held their ground and they're making improvements. You just want Beedy there because you want the continuity of the line to come together before week one.
The left tackle spot
sets
the
tone.
Critical.
Absolutely. Sets the tone for everybody. I mean, look at what it did last season. It didn't help that he wasn't playing next to the same guard every week. That didn't help, but that wasn't necessarily the major issue.
You know the bad news about this? If the left tackle spot does not fix itself, it basically means the card on the bottom of your house of cards has a bad, bad crease in it. And no matter how many new cards you put on top of it, it's still going to fall.
The foundation. The left tackle is the foundation. If you don't have strength on the left tackle.
I mean, this all
goes
back. And that's why I love this game so much. Because there are fundamentals, there are principles, there are beliefs. Everything is built off of those concepts. And then it's the actual plays and the X's and the O's and the scouting of the personnel and the matchups that you get every Sunday. This is the greatest game in the universe, the National Football League. I mean, how can you not live and breathe it 365? How can you not? There's so much here to digest every minute of the day.
Well, of all people, it's fair for you to pose that question. Somebody else may have some other priorities and things that they like to balance out their life. You, we know, are in a whole category and a whole world of your own. And actually, related to that, we're getting some reactions that if Charlie Brown winds up starting at left tackle, what that may mean for your future. Tremaine Anderson at Jaguars, B123. If Charlie Brown has to start this year, Eli is going to have some trouble. I'm paraphrasing it because he said much harsher words, and Paul is going to pass out. Is that a fair description of what may transpire? Do we want to get you on the record right now?
No, I just think that the bottom line is that Will Beattie's got to get it done. Because the alternative is not good.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Morning, Lance, Paul. How you doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Derek.
I got so many things in my head. I hope I get coherent and try to get some of this stuff out. But I just want to say, first of all, you know, going back to the left tackle the situation, you know, I don't blame the Giants for not picking up Zach Miller because he was a guard, and you just don't take a guard at number 12 and then project him out to a left tackle.
No, Zach Martin had played guard and tackle at Notre Dame. The projection was that he could also play center in the NFL. That's where the projection was. But
I do blame the Giants for not going up and get Taylor Lewan. It was kind of depressing seeing him wall off that side in the preseason game. I mean, just looked like a wall over there the other day when I was looking at him. So that was a little bit depressing. But, you know, I know we already hashed out the Zach Martin thing, so I'm not even going to go back there. The thing I'm trying to think is Will Beedy played bad right after he got his contract. I mean, it basically looked like an Albert Hainsworth attack of the tackle position. I mean, he got his money, and then he just went terrible. So he's not coming, you know, we don't project. I'm projecting him, unless his attitude changes, not recovering from injury. Of course, you're going to be, you know, you're not good when you're hurt. But you played bad when you wasn't injured. You just basically played bad after you got your contract, and things went south right after that point. I mean, dramatically. I mean, you played well to get your contract, and then it dropped off the left, off a cliff as soon as you got it. So something tells me right there not all of that has to do with injury or anything.
No one has made any excuses for him, okay? Will Beedy had a bad 2013. There is no denying that. I think what it comes down to, my friend, is that the Giants are banking on the 3.5 sack effort that he put forth in 2012. And I'm going to give you a number. I'm telling you right now, if the Giants can get 16 games out of Will Beedy, and he can give up 6 sacks on the season, even maximum 7, I think that's good enough. I think that would actually be competent enough for the Giants to be a playoff team.
You almost got to take the play-action pass out of with the situation now, you almost got to take the play-action pass out of the game. I mean, out of Eli's game. He can't afford to turn around, turn his back to defenders. There's no way he could do that.
I know.
You see how when he came out of the play-action pass and almost got killed when that Ole blocked the Charles Brown made, I mean, that's ridiculous.
And again, that goes back to what we said about the power running game. The play action pass is Eli's best weapon, and you take that away when you don't have a power running game. You're just throwing it into the trash.
All right, Derek. Looks like we may have lost Derek. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And, you know, that's why it is so imperative for them to continue to show consistency on the ground, as you mentioned, Paul, because it's going to take some additional pressure off of the offensive line. It's not as if the opposition's not going to come towards Eli anymore, but when you have a running game, now they've got to worry about the running game, and they can't say, well, now we're just going to throw everybody the way of Eli Manning. We need to step back a little so that we protect ourselves from a 73-yard run from Rashad Jennings.
Can I, for one second, Lance, play opposing defensive coordinator with you?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're the Giants. I'm Team X. What do you think I'm going to attack when I see your offense on the field? What am I coming after? I'm coming after your left tackle. I know what Pugh's got. Pretty good player. I see you improve your interior line. Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to beat up your receivers. Okay, because your receivers, to me, haven't proven that they can succeed at a very high level given that style of play. Even Cruz has had his troubles at times with teams that get physical with him. Reuben Randall's been very inconsistent. Beckham hasn't shown anything yet, and he's a speed guy. So my two things that I'm going to do, I am going to get real nasty with your receivers. I'm probably not going to bother a whole lot with your tight end until they prove that they can produce something. And I'm going to come at your left tackle with stunts, with corner blitzes off that edge, with safety blitzes, with whoever my pass rusher is over there. I'm going to tell him use double moves, go to the edge, rush on the outside. And I'm just going to say, okay, we know what we're going to do to you. You get it done. Go ahead. Prove to me that you can attack me. Because I know exactly what I'm going to do to attack you. And until you are effective, I'm just going to keep doing it.
That's why you have to run the football. It's as simple as that. That's your only option. If you're taking away my wide receivers and you're coming after Eli off the left side, you have to run the football.
Power running game is an absolute must under that situation if you can't prove to the defense that they have to get out of those other scenarios. It's not that hard.
And that's why if you're the fan that puts a lot of stock and substance into the preseason games and you're really watching the first-tier starters and you're trying to assess some positives, the positive to me over these first two preseason games, Paul, is the running game. At least there's been some bright spots
yes,
on the ground. So you
absolutely
could say, okay, here's something we could build upon.
Absolutely. Because right now, that power running game that seems to be gaining some traction is the only thing that it could stop a defensive coordinator from doing just what I said. It is the only thing that will give him pause. And that's what you got to do. You got to put doubt in his mind. You got to give him a reason to worry about something else because he knows where your Achilles are right now.
And if you look at Green Bay as a comparison, and I'm not saying that they're going to duplicate the entire Packers system, what was the biggest difference for the Packers offense last year? The arrival of Eddie Lacy. Prior to that, Paul, Aaron Rodgers, he threw like 40 times a game. And Green Bay still had success, but you know what? He took an awful lot of sacks. He faced a lot of pressure. The arrival of Eddie Lacy was the turning point to their offense last season. So in this West Coast offense, in a system that Ben McAdoo runs, you have a running game. It is the difference maker. It's the X factor.
I don't want to bring this guy up because it opens up a whole nother story and a whole nother can of worms. But the truth of the matter is, for years, the Cowboys did not address their offensive line. Tony Romo did not necessarily have a power running game to lean on. And that's one of the reasons, I'm sorry to say, Lance, again, I don't like picking on him all the time, but it's one of the reasons why the Cowboys have not been a playoff team for a number of years. Okay? It's just that simple. Offensive line not so good. All of these factors that we just talked about manifest themselves. To boot, you don't have the power running game to go with it. I mean, really? I mean, come on. It's fundamental football.
201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Beto. So glad you could join us here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Alan is in Florida. Alan, what's happening?
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, Alan. What you got?
just to just negate that point you just made, I mean, yeah, Lacy broke out, but let's not forget Aaron Rodgers missed a bunch of games last year. So, I mean, you take him out of the lineup, obviously you're not going to have Scott Tolzien, Fetika Wallace, and Matt Flynn throwing the ball all over the place. So, I mean, they kind of had to rely on Eddie Lacy in that instance.
Well, but if you go back even when Aaron Rodgers was healthy, Alan, they were still utilizing Eddie Lacy. They did not wait for Eddie Lacy to break out once Aaron Rodgers got hurt. He was a big part of the game plan early.
Yeah, he had showed them right away that he was going to provide them with that punch that they were looking for.
Yeah, I mean, you look, I mean, yeah, he ran 400 yards once. Before I'm looking at the stats right now, the game log. Yeah, he had some nice averages, but he didn't break 100. He broke 100 one game.
No, don't misunderstand. When I'm talking power running game, I'm not even talking about having 150 yards a game. What I'm talking about is in situations, you have to be able to produce a power running game to keep defenses honest. And you know what?
Well, you mentioned it. On third and two, you're right. Go,
you know?
Bang the ball.
And that's what it is. So it's not about Eddie Lacy running for 100 yards. It's about if he ran for 75 yards, in what spots did he run for that yardage, and did he succeed in moving the chains? That's what I'm talking about.
And I'll add to Paul's point, Alan, the other thing is, forget how much yardage he got. How about the fact when you look at his game log, and I just brought it up, they gave him at least 22 carries for the stretch of about six or seven games. That means you're committed to the run. It's not just dangling out there and you're teasing it. You're actually running the football.
Yeah.
So my point, what I initially wanted to call, I just wanted to add on that because it was the first thing I heard, was you know, I'm not as concerned with the offensive line only because we have ran the ball pretty well. And even if you take away the 73-yard run from Jennings, we're still averaging about between those two, Williams and Jennings, because, you know, let's be honest, they're going to get 98% of the carry. They're still averaging, you know, 4.5 yards a carry. So the offensive line's got to be good to open up those holes. And at the same time, I look at how comfortable Nassib looks in there. Yeah, he might be going against the twos, but he just looks really comfortable back there, and he's able to have a little bit more time, and that's why it just comes back to Eli. He just doesn't look comfortable out there, and that's my biggest concern. I'm not worried about the line protecting him because, you know, you put the offensive lineman on the other side, and then you put a running back on the side with Beatty, you know, to pick up any blitz or something like that, but he just doesn't look comfortable.
Well, in the first two preseason games, you've had Eli in there with the starters against the starting defenses of the other teams that have their best pass rushers and their best schemes
going.
You're
going to be playing against that in the regular season. I mean,
but here's the thing. Who's playing left tackle for Eli in those situations?
Yeah, all right.
That's it. Eli knows in these preseason games right now, he's going out there with his less than best left tackle against the best the other team has to offer.
So what exactly is going to happen during the season if we don't get that figured out?
See, now you understand why I feel like the Giants' left tackle position could be the Achilles heel to the season. Now you
I
see.
I tweeted for Lance a little while ago. I mean, I was heartbroken. I was in the airport with my laptop watching the draft. I was traveling for work, and I mean, when they took LaJuan 11, I just closed my computer. I didn't even care what they took after that.
All right, so, I mean, I just find it amazing how many people see the light, and obviously you saw it then, and that's great because I tried to tell people this, and a lot of people did not want to listen to me. All I kept hearing was, Ebron, tight end first round, get a tight end, get a wide receiver. Everybody wanted a skill position guy in the first
Absolutely.
Round. Well, let me ask you, where would the Giants be right now, offensive line-wise, if they had gotten a stud tackle? Would we even have this conversation?
Well, even though, absolutely. But even though I called it and I wanted to reach, I really wanted to reach. I said, go get Benjamin from FSU. If you're going to go in the first round draft a receiver, why are you going to draft the receiver with the exact same body type as Victor Cruz? You don't need 2 6-foot receivers on your team. If you're going to go get a guy that early, go get your big beast. Get your 6'5 guy that has the body of a Calvin Johnson, of a big physical receiver. I mean, even Dez Bryant, who's 6'2, plays really big for 6'2. But to go and 12 overall to take a 6'1",
right.
6-foot receiver.
You know what? That's months ago. It is what it is. Let's go back to your point, though, that was positive. Yes, the running game looks like it's gaining some ground. And yes, Ryan Nassib, in his snaps in the first two preseason games, has clearly risen his level of play. Those are good things, and I'm with you. But I won't necessarily accept the criticism of Eli knowing what he's working with and in the situations that he's played in. I understand why he might be a little.
It's not a criticism. It's more of a concern. It's a worry.
Fine. And that's fine.
Well, but with that being said, Alan, two preseason games in, I mean, are you really that overly concerned knowing that it's a brand-new offense and he's played very limited snaps?
Oh, he needs to be concerned. He does.
Snaps. I mean, if you see, like, when they played Pittsburgh, he played about three or four drives, and Roethlisberger just put a quick drive and got out of there. I mean, he's had ample opportunities to get out there.
But like he only attempted two passes, though.
Yeah, but the issue here, Lance, is very well explained in that the left tackle spot at the moment is not good.
Charles Brown is in there. Let's see what Beattie can do with Eli in. It's hard for me to judge. Listen, I'm not saying the left tackle is not a concern, but I want to see Beattie in with Eli.
But his comment, I think the caller's comment is, if Charles Brown is playing left tackle during the regular season, it's a problem.
Can't argue that. I will not argue that. There's nothing I can come back
with. One last question I have for you guys. Can Williams take the starting job from Jennings?
No. Jennings is going to be the primary back. And Williams, over the course of time, I'm sure he's going to be the future here. But
you got a lot of that power back that you're talking about with Lacy. Maybe not as powerful as Lacy.
But I'll tell you what, Rashad Jennings has power too. He's a big guy, and he's strong. He's a combo back. He has a lot of tools.
And, Alan, just think about this. You start Rashad Jennings. Hey, Andre Williams is then going to come in as a different change of pace type of guy.
Oh,
I mean, that's
absolutely
a benefit. That's not necessarily a bad thing, even though he's not penciled in as the starter.
Jacobs and Bradshaw all over again.
There you go. And even Derek Ward, the year that Paul referenced, the three-headed monster. How effective was that in 2008? Yeah. All right, Alan, appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Yep.
You got it. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's try to get a few more calls in here before we wrap up the program. Vince is in Pennsylvania. Vince, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi.
Doing well, Vince. What you got?
Hey, listen, here's – I was just at the game this past weekend, and one thing I didn't understand was they had Eli in for four series. I watched Roethlisberger go out quick, but they only passed twice, and – I mean, obviously, you're not trying to run the ball to win the game. It's preseason. You're trying to see what Eli's got. And I didn't understand why they didn't throw the ball, and we can't even see what he's doing. But on another aspect, you know, a lot of times Eli made tight ends what they were. And with this new offense, kind of makes me think back with the Tiki Barber, Kerry Collins days where a lot of checkdowns went to Tiki Barber and the tight ends and stuff like that. So, but we don't have the tight ends that are going to be catching. I hope at least, for your sake, with the left tackle spot and our line spot, some of these tight ends are going to be able to block to open up that run game and maybe passing to the receivers.
Well, that's the goal. As Paul was referencing earlier, the goal is to have a reliable tight end that's not necessarily going to go out and catch X amount of passes, but is going to be that sixth offensive lineman. Because when you have the security of an additional tight end, that can at least help cover up some of your other issues and shortcomings. You look at the Seattle Seahawks, for example, a team that won the Super Bowl, and the Giants have one of those two tight ends in Kellen Davis. They had two double tight end formations where they had one guy stay back and block, and another guy go out and catch receptions, that being a Zach Miller. Kellen Davis was the guy that would stay on the offensive line and block. So, you know, perhaps Davis, and I saw a tweet related to that. You know, he's a big guy. He's 6'7". Maybe he's going to be the guy that will become that reliable blocker. I don't know if we've seen it enough during practice, but that could perhaps be the answer in terms of an every down blocker.
But Eli does make I don't know how he does it, I mean, to be honest, but he makes – tight ends look good. He brings a tight end one year. He gets the ball. So, I mean, this new offense I'm excited about because the one thing that drove me crazy with Gilbride was the shotgun draw. I never seen a team run a shotgun draw so much, especially like you would say, like crazy times. Like, you know, it'd be third down and eight and you'd be running a shotgun draw. But everybody knew it was coming. And it was like our only run play after a while. And I'm excited to see hopefully that not be so often.
Well, one of the reasons, and I don't want to belittle what Eli's done for tight ends, but remember now, his best years with these, quote, no-name tight ends came when he also had a power running game and also had guys like Cruz and Nix and Manningham and guys like that to throw to, which, of course, opened things up on the outside and downfield. So is it any wonder that he was able to utilize tight ends in critical situations? No. This goes back to what I said to you before about the domino effect. Everything in football is a domino effect. One thing affects the other constantly. It's like a quilt. You know, everything is intertwined.
But I definitely would have liked to see them throw more in this past game, having him in for four series or whatever it was.
Well,
I mean,
look, they took a sack and they took a penalty, and before you know it, again, you're running against the first-team Steelers defense. It's a blitzkrieg-happy defense.
Yeah.
And Eli's backed up deep in his own territory. You know what they're going to do. And what's he got at left tackle?
Yeah, Vince, right. I think the game plan was to throw a few more times. I don't think they went into the game and said that the ratio was going to be like that. Unfortunately, as Paul mentioned, the way the game played out. Keep in mind, there was one drive, Vince. They had three consecutive offensive penalties.
Right.
They had two holding calls and the false start.
And what is the reward in making a play in a preseason game when you risk the health of your quarterback? What's the reward there?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I was surprised that he was in as long as he was.
Yeah.
All right, Vince, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the lines. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, good morning. What's happening?
Good morning. Great show as usual.
Appreciate that, Joe.
I just want to remind all you fans and Paul and everybody that the left tackle was critical, but so was the center part. There was a big question on Walton coming back, and he looks great so far. Right guard was a big question, I believe, where Snead was, if he was going to make it, and he couldn't make it. So, I mean, Ritzberg was your insurance there, and so far he looks good, and Mosley looks good. And so far the question is still out. I think we needed another weapon when they took Beckham. And I'm hoping that he's going to be there, you know what I mean? If they're hard on the line of scrimmage, the defensive backs, and he's out there and he can get by one, it could be a touchdown. So I just want everybody to remember that. And I think the Giants, their draft is still to be questioned, and they did great so far. So have patience. Look at what Williams, look at what the linebacker they took. This could be one
Devon
of the
Kennard,
best drafts of all time. So,
well, it's way too early to review drafts. I mean, I laugh, and Paul's laughing too. I laugh when 3 weeks after the draft, we're already saying who the winners and losers are. I mean, give these guys 2 or 3 years to determine who's a success and who's a loser.
I will say this, though. It's going to be virtually impossible to duplicate the 2007 draft when that entire rookie class contributed to a Super Bowl. I mean, that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, well, we have to win a Super Bowl, but hey, they're already all in there. Even I forget the other running back. He might have a chance of making the team and looking good too, you know. So I mean, it's a long season, and I think a big critical thing is we do have that running game, hopefully to build on, and we can go from there. But if you don't have that, you can't go nowhere. So that our defense and specialty teams keep us in games and keep down the turnovers, and we can win that way till the offense gets going. So, hey.
All right, Joe.
What can we say? The Giants, I think, answered a lot of questions so far, and I know left tackle's still a big question, but like I said, there was question center, guard, another weapon, the running backs, and so far all the rest of them are coming through. So, hopefully, you know. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Joe. Appreciate the phone call.
Final comment from me, Lance. Then I gotta change for a TV spot I need to do in reference to special teams, and that is also another issue right now. You know that Quentin Demps will be the kickoff returner, and he's proven with the Chiefs last year that he can be really, really good at it. Of course, you need to be able to get the kickoff first, and everyone's putting him out of the end zone. It's not like you got a lot of chances. But who's the punt returner right now? You know, Holiday has turned out to be a bad free agent signing to this point. He hasn't been able to get on the field. When he was on the field early in training camp, he had trouble holding onto the ball as a receiver. So that doesn't really look like a good solution. Coughlin himself has said he wants Beckham to be the guy. But again, right now, we don't know. So Preston Parker right now is the best punt returner the Giants have had to this point during training camp. Preston Parker, 3-year pro with the Bucks, 1 year out of football, trying to make a comeback, and right now he's the Giants' best option in the punt return game. So what I'm trying to tell this particular caller is he's happy with the special teams and the defense and the offense and all these wonderful things. Well, that's great. But you know what? I don't see Tom Coughlin smiling much about special teams right now. He's got some doubts and some questions, and he should.
And it's interesting because all offseason we were ranting and raving about this is the most depth we've seen in years, Paul. The problem is all of these guys are going down left and right with injuries. We're not seeing the depth anymore.
I mean, it would be great if Trindon Holliday was healthy.
He has to.
And if he held on to the ball and if he did what he did for the Broncos and was electrifying and just incredibly explosive and added so much pop, like what David Meggett used to do for the Giants years ago, that would be really cool. But so far, it hasn't happened.
I mean, we're getting to the point where we're ranking hamstring injuries on this team. Holliday's got to get on the field. I was excited about that signing, but if he doesn't get on the field, it's hard to get excited. Got to show me.
No doubt.
That's what happens. Well, listen, appreciate all the phone calls. Appreciate all the tweets. That is going to wrap up the program here for us this morning on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be back up and running tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. Good discussion as always. We will try to address a number of your tweets off the air if we did not address them here on the program. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest news and notes. We will speak to you tomorrow morning. Have a good one.